Welcome back to Equity Tutors. So today what we're going to do is to apply all of our previous knowledge from the past few lessons on genetics and inheritance and how that contributes to evolution and natural selection and how those traits are passed on. So starting with, let's remind ourselves of what a phenotypic variation is, or a phenotype variation. So this is the observable characteristics of an organism. That's its phenotype, so the things that we can see. And phenotypic variation is the difference in the phenotype between organisms of the same species. So, for example, how different do the human race look from one another? So this variation means that the individuals within a population of a species may show a wide range of variation in phenotype, and in some cases phenotypic variation is explained by genetic factors. So for example, the four different blood groups in humans that are observed in human populations are due to different individuals within the population having two or three possible alleles for the single ABO gene. So the phenotypic variation in this case in blood groups is entirely dependent on this one gene and the three different possible alleles that you can have in that gene. And that entirely explains the phenotypic variation in this case. So it's caused by a genetic factor. In other cases, however, the phenotypic variation is explained by environmental factors. So for example, clones of plants with exactly the same genetic information or DNA will grow to different heights when grown in different environmental conditions. So, therefore, phenotypic variation can be explained by both a combination of genetic and environmental factors. And then we also have examples of phenotypic variation which can be explained by both genetic and environmental factors. So generally, genetic environmental factors contribute to all of our phenotypic variation, but in some cases it can also contribute to one individual thing. And the example for this is sickle cell anemia. So the recessive allele that causes sickle cell anemia is in a high frequency in certain populations where malaria is prevalent. So that is an environmental factor due to heterozygous individuals being resistant to malaria. So that is an environmental factor having an effect on the genetics. So it's a combination of both, which then leads to that phenotypic variation. So the phenotypic variation of the individuals in a population is determined by genetic variation within the population and the interaction of the environment on the individuals. So to summarize, the equation we'd use to explain phenotypic variation equals genetic variation plus environmental variation. So next, let's talk about genetic variation. So organisms of the same species will have very similar genotypes, but two individuals, even identical twins, will have differences between their DNA base sequences. So consider the size of our genomes. They are enormous. They are many millions of bases. And every time those are copied, there's bound to be mistakes made in copying. So these differences are small considering the size of our genomes between individuals of the same species, but they still do exist. And the small differences in DNA base sequences between individual organisms within a species population is called genetic variation. And genetic variation is transferred from one generation to the next, and it generates the phenotypic variation, as we just explained, within a species population. So the primary source of this genetic variation is mutation. So that literally means changes in the DNA base sequence. And mutations result in the generation of new alleles. So remember, an allele is just a variation of a gene. So it's a change to the original gene. The new allele may be advantageous, disadvantageous or have no effect on the phenotype at all. So new alleles are not always seen in the individual that they first occur in. They can remain hidden, meaning they're not expressed within a population for several generations before they contribute to the phenotypic variation. So it's likely that all of us have many mutations and variations in our DNA that have inconsequential effects on our phenotype or even the proteins that those genes code for. But that doesn't mean at some point in the future that they will not have an effect. And let's also remind ourselves that genetic variation is also caused by the following three processes as they result in new combination of alleles in gametes or individuals. So these are three different ways where we get genetic variation. So firstly, crossing over of non-sister chromatids during prophase in meiosis, independent assortment of homologous chromosomes during metaphase in meiosis, and then random fusion of gametes during fertilization. And those three things have been covered previously in our lessons. So we have natural variation within our genes, both because of environmental factors and random mutations that occur. And this all ultimately leads to a process called natural selection. So every individual within a species has the potential to reproduce and have offspring which contribute to population growth. If all the offspring of every individual survived to adulthood and reproduced, the population would experience exponential growth. This type of growth only happens when there are no environmental factors or population checks acting on the population. For example, when there are plentiful resources and no disease. So thinking about if you grew bacteria in a lab in a controlled environment and fed that bacteria with all the food and nutrients it needed, it would grow exponentially until there was a limiting factor to that growth. One well-known but rare example actually of exponential growth is in a population is the introduction of 24 European rabbits into Australia in the 1800s. So the rabbits had an abundance of resources, no competition, and no natural predators. And this meant that the population increased rapidly and they became a major pest. And you can see what that population growth looks like on this graph, following the green line over time and the number of rabbits. And you see a slower phase at the beginning, and then the line just shoots up where you get exponential growth. But in reality, there are several environmental factors that prevent every individual in a population making it to adulthood and reproducing. So what are these environmental factors? So environmental factors limit population size as they result in differential survival and reproduction. So some individuals survive and reproduce, some do not. And environmental factors can be biotic or abiotic. So biotic factors involve other living organisms, so things like predation, competition for resources, and also disease. And then abiotic factors involve non-living parts of the environment, so things like availability of light, water supply, and the pH of the soil. And a combination of these biotic and abiotic factors means that not all individuals within a population will survive. So, for example, if a food source is limited, some animals within a population will not get enough to eat and then will starve to death. So for most populations in the wild, the number of offspring produced is much higher than the number of individuals that make it to adulthood. And this then brings us back to natural selection. So, as I said, variation exists within a species population. And environmental factors, such as the abiotic and biotic factors I just explained, will affect the chance of survival of an organism, and they therefore act as a selection pressure. Selection pressures increase the chance of individuals with a specific phenotype surviving and reproducing over others. the individuals with the favoured phenotypes are described as having a higher fitness. So the fitness of an organism is defined as the ability to survive and pass on its alleles to an offspring. So if you have a higher fitness, more chance of survival, more likely to reproduce and pass on that gene to your offspring. Organisms with higher fitness possess adaptations that make them better suited to the environment. So now we're talking about one organism's survival over another organism because they have a survival advantage that means they are more likely, for example, to be able to access food or avoid predation. So when selection pressures act over several generations of a species, they can cause a change in the allele frequency and therefore the phenotype frequency in the population through natural selection. So natural selection is the process by which individuals within a fitter phenotype are more likely to survive and pass on their alleles to their offspring so that the advantageous alleles increase in the frequency over time and generations. And we're going to go through an example in a second. So the allele frequency and the phenotype frequency in a population can also change due to isolation. So if a population becomes isolated from the other populations of a species, for example, a few lizards of the same species are transported on a driftwood to a new uninhabited island and start a new population there, then this new population may experience new, i.e. different, selection pressures from the main population. So in this new location, there's a different environment. So over many generations, this will cause the allele and phenotype frequencies in the new population to change compared to the population in the original location on the mainland. But let's go back to our rabbit example and look at an example of natural selection in this population. So a variation in fur colour exists within the rabbit populations. And at a single gene locus, normal brown fur is produced by a dominant allele, whereas the white fur is produced by a recessive allele in a homozygous individual. Rabbits have natural predators like foxes, which act as a type of selection pressure in this environment. So rabbits with a white coat do not camouflage as well as rabbits with a brown fur, meaning the predators are more likely to see the white rabbits when they are hunting. As a result, rabbits with a white fur are less likely to survive than rabbits with a brown fur. Their rabbits with a brown fur therefore have a selection advantage. They are more likely to survive, to reproduce, and pass on those alleles to their offspring. And therefore, over many generations, the frequency of alleles for brown will increase and the frequency of alleles for white fur will decrease. So that is how natural selection works as a result of a selective pressure acting on a population and enriching the abundance of an advantageous allele. But you can also have something called a selective advantage. So every individual within a species population has the potential to reproduce and have offspring. But in reality, there are many environmental factors to prevent every individual in a population from surviving to adulthood and reproducing. So examples of environmental factors limiting survival, I'll go through some examples. So for African lions living in the wild, there are several environmental factors that ensure not all individuals survive and reproduce. So the first thing is competition for food. So these are similar to the factors we just previously discussed, the biotic and abiotic factors. So there is a limited supply of prey. Other lions and carnivores will also be hunting the same prey. And if a lion is not able to hunt and feed, it will die from starvation. Secondly, competition for a reproductive mate. So female lions will often outnumber male lions in a population. This means that males compete with each other to mate with the females. When a male is in a contest with another male, one or both could be injured or killed. Whoever loses the contest won't be able to mate with the females in a pride and so won't pass his genes on to any offspring. So even if that lion, for example, has a gene or an allele that is a survival advantage, in this case, there is still another limiting factor to the that gene being passed on to the offspring. Supply of water. So African habitats can be very dry, and the water sources that the lions drink can be miles apart. And if a lake or source of water dries up due to, for example, environmental factors, then they can die due to dehydration. And finally, temperature. The extreme heat experienced in the lion's African habitat can cause them to overheat and die, and can prevent them from hunting for long periods during the day, meaning they're less likely to get the food that they need to survive. So in the second half of this lesson, I want to talk about different types of selective advantages, and how they look when you model the population growth on a graph. So to recap, a selective advantage is an environmental factor that affects the individual's chance of survival. So they are selection pressures. And in any species population, some individuals will have phenotypes that make them better adapted and then more likely to reproduce. This is due to the genetic variation present within a population. For example, lions, again, with phenotypes that are fitter and faster, are more likely to be able to catch prey, survive, and reproduce. And their phenotype is said to provide them with a selective advantage. Male lions with stronger and more aggressive phenotypes are more likely to outcompete other males for access to females, ensuring they can reproduce. And again, their phenotype provides them with a selective advantage. Individuals with phenotype providing selective advantages are likely to produce more offspring and pass on the favourable alleles to the next generation. Over time, differential reproductive success has an effect on the allele frequencies within a gene pool. Alleles that are favourable provide an advantage will increase in frequency in a gene pool, and then alleles that are not favourable and do not provide a selection advantage will decrease in the gene pool. So what are the types of selections and how do they affect the population growth? So there are three types of selection: stabilising selection, disruptive selection, and directional selection. So we'll start with stabilising selection. Stabilising selection is a natural selection that keeps allele frequencies relatively constant over generations. This means things stay as they are unless there's a change in the environment. A classic example of a stabilising selection can be seen in human birth weights. So very low and very high birth weights are selected against, leading to the maintenance of this intermediate or average birth weight. So as you can see on the graph, the number of newborns on the y-axis and human birth weight on the x-axis, you get an average in the middle, and this has a normal distribution, meaning there's very few numbers of babies being born with very low birth weight and very high at low numbers with a high birth weight, and the majority of birth weights are in the middle. And this is unlikely to change unless there is a big change in our environment that would give either end of this distribution of birth weight an advantage. Because at the moment, that mean birth weight, the average birth weight, is the ideal weight for the baby to be born, for baby's best chance of survival, whilst also not being too big that it harms the mother. So the next type of selection is directional selection. And directional selection is a natural selection that produces a gradual change in allele frequencies over several generations. So this usually happens when there is a change in the environment, or a new allele has appeared in the population that is advantageous. So for example, a recent finding has shown that climate change is having an effect on fish size in certain habitats. So the increase in temperature is selecting for a smaller body size and against a larger body size. Warmer seas cause fish metabolism to speed up and so increases their need for oxygen, and oxygen levels are lower in warmer seas. Larger fish have greater metabolic needs than smaller fish, and so they feel the effect of increased temperatures more strongly than the smaller fish. Organisms are sensitive to changes in temperature primarily because of the effect of that temperature can have an impact on enzyme activity. So you know, we've learned previously about enzymes and they work at an optimal temperature. So any changes in that temperature will affect enzyme activity. Fish with a smaller body size are therefore fitter and better adapted to living in seas experiencing increased temperatures. Fish body size is determined by both genetic and environmental factors. Fish of a smaller size are more likely to reproduce and pass on their alleles to offspring, and then therefore over generations this leads to an increase in the frequency of alleles to produce the small body size and a decrease in the frequency of alleles that produce a larger body size. And you can see on the graph here of the fish body size, the line where the average used to be, and there is now a shift to the left as the body size average has become smaller. And then the final example is disruptive selection. So disruptive selection is a natural selection that maintains high frequencies of two different sets of alleles. In other words, individuals with the intermediate or average phenotype are selected against. So in the example that we just used about the fish, this would mean that the average fish size would be impacted, and then you'd get an enrichment of small and large fish. So disruptive selection causes polymorphism, the continued existence of two or more distinct phenotypes in the species. This can occur in an environment that shows variation. For example, birds that live in the Galapagos Island use their beak to forage for different size seeds. And what happens here is the size of the bird's beak is either small or large, with intermediate medium-sized beak selected against. The reason for this is that different types of seeds available are more efficiently foraged by a shorter or larger beak. So imagine there are certain seeds in a crevice where only very small beaks can go in, so the medium-sized beak is too big for the small sized seeds, and then the opposite is true for the bigger sized seeds. They need a bigger beak, so it's a Goldilocks situation. So I'm going to end today's lesson there. So just to summarize what we covered, we looked at phenotypic and genetic variation and how they can both contribute to natural selection. We covered a couple of examples of natural selection and how those animals gained selective advantage. And then finally, we looked at the types of selection, so stabilizing, disruptive, and directional selection.
Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can access additional content on our Patreon page by searching for Equity Tutors, where we have a second 30-minute lesson every week, plus monthly bonus content. You can also find us on most social media platforms. We will keep you updated on new content, and you can find us there by searching for Equity Tutors UK. Please like, share, subscribe, and comment wherever you are listening. And if you're enjoying, please leave a review.
Bye.